From Permanent Record Studios in Austin, Texas, this is CreatePod,
a podcast about the art of podcasting.
Welcome back to CreatePod. I'm Mike Moody. My co-host Grant Davis is busy filming a topless scene somewhere. No joke. So I'll be introing this episode alone. So on this episode, we have a great chat with Mariah Gossett. She is a podcast producer here in Austin. She produces the podcast Scene with Miranda, Creative Queso, and Masters and Founders. So Mariah's job as a producer has her doing all kinds of stuff. She edits podcasts. She schedules interviews. She works with podcasters and brands to create podcasts from the ground up, and she loves what she does. So if you want to learn what it's like to work with a podcast producer, or if you want to know what it's like to be a podcast producer, this episode is for you. Tell us about what you do in the podcasting space.
Sure. So I wear a producer's hat, which means a lot of things for indie shows, probably more things than if I worked at, you know, say an NPR station or something like that. So I schedule guests for my hosts. I also do majority of the editing as far as the technical aspects of things. And depending on the host I'm working with, they, some of them have a vision of what they want each episode to sound like. And so I just kind of work with them to accomplish that vision. Others just give me a whole bunch of content and I make it sound as good as possible. So yeah, I do a little bit of everything. But I like to say I'm like a spreadsheet master who also can move sound waves around.
Okay. We're here to talk about your failures.
Yeah.
Because that's what we learn from.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You said you had a story for me. Tell me about your podcast failure.
Sure. So going way back, I did radio in college. And so that was sort of my first foray into the audio world and storytelling. And I had a really great time and wonderful people who taught me lots of great things in college. And then I graduated at the height of the recession, which meant that there were no jobs and plenty of unpaid internships. But unfortunately, I didn't come from loads and loads of wealth, so that wasn't an option for me. So I kind of jumped into working in marketing for nonprofits just because it was a way to make an okay amount of money and not feel like I sold my soul. And so I kind of started getting the itch 3 years after college to really start working in audio again. And so I was like, well, I have no money, so I'm just going to grab my GarageBand. I bought a little $200 microphone and I was like, I got this all by myself. Don't worry about it. And I probably didn't have the strongest concept for a show. I think that was mistake number one.
What was the concept?
So it was just called Hey Ladies. And my whole concept is I interviewed interesting women.
That's not bad.
Right.
I mean, it's a little general, but it's not bad.
Yeah. So it was very general. Luckily I ended up making a lot of really great contacts that way, just because it was a way for me to ask people that I admired if I could have a conversation with them. I think of it as like the lesser version of how Judd Apatow somehow managed to get a lot of people to let him interview them when he was younger. But I think the biggest mistake was then it was kind of like the election stuff was starting. And so I was like, oh, I want to cover like the protests that are happening. And I want to like do these little mini episodes about like things that are happening in Texas. It was like when Wendy Davis did her, you know, filibuster. And so there was all of these kind of exciting things happening. And then the gubernatorial race was happening in Texas. And so I started trying to cover some of those things in little in-between episodes between the interviews. And it just became like far too much for one person. So I just had like way too many ideas and was trying to synthesize them into one show that I was managing by myself. And so it just became like way too much. I was not organized. And it got to the point where I just like couldn't keep up with my own production schedule because I just kept going and recording tape and more tape and more tape and didn't have a plan for any of that tape. Mm-hmm. And had already started pushing out episodes. And so I think in retrospect, what would have been smart is just to say, hey, I'm just going to record a lot of stuff. I'm going to see where it all ends up. and then maybe I'll do something with all of this tape, you know, instead of trying to put something out at the same time as recording stuff, because then it just became very disjointed.
So where did that project ultimately end up? How many episodes did you produce? What did you do with all that tape?
So I think I put out 5 or 6 episodes in total, with maybe 3 mini episodes. I forgot what I even called them. And so I published some stuff, but the other thing is, like, I think my best interview I ever did, I never even published it, because I just got, I got accepted into graduate school. Cause then I was like, okay, well, I need some structure back in my life. How can I get someone to help me sort of do something with all this stuff? And so
the failure here with that project was that you didn't keep it going, and you couldn't, because it was a one-woman show.
Right. And I think what I realized is I work best when I have a collaborator. And I know everyone is different, but I am someone who, like, if someone else is counting on me for something, then I get it done. Like, I will wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'll get it done, like, whatever it needs to be. Like, if that is work or for a, you know, a personal project, as long as someone else is counting on me to get that done, then I get it done. Which, on a person, my therapist has a lot of feelings about that. But.
Well, it sounds like, I mean, it sounds like you're telling me the story of why you're now a podcast producer and
right.
working for other people
yes.
and getting their projects done.
Exactly.
Okay. Tell me more about how Hey Ladies and your experience with that, and I guess the pod fading or the failure of that, helped you realize that you would rather maybe be a producer of a podcast and help other people than do your own show? Or do you still want to do your own show?
You know, I enjoy being on a microphone. Obviously, I'm here talking to you today, so mm-hmm. that's not something that bothers me. I do think, as a person who somehow finds joy in paperwork, that I get a lot of satisfaction out of being a producer, because I feel like I'm helping something happen, and it's not a lot of pressure on me to be the creative person around it. You know, there are creative decisions that get made, but there's, like, an extra person to bounce that idea off of. And it's also fun to, like, listen to other people's ideas and help them make them happen. I really enjoy when someone comes, I love problem solving. And so I think that is where I find, like, my creative satisfaction, is when someone's like, well, I want to talk about this specific issue. What kind of a guest can we get on to talk about that issue? Or I have this guest lined up. I have no idea what they're going to talk about. And, like, I'll dive in and do a bunch of research and be like, well, I think they'll probably talk about, you know, this issue, and they wrote a piece about it here, and here's a video clip of them, so that you can kind of get a better understanding of what they're going to talk about in this interview.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk more about your role as a producer.
Mm-hmm.
In that role, are there any failures that you can talk about, whether they're large or small, that you learn from that might help somebody?
Right. I think the biggest thing is just making sure, when you hear something that you think could sound better, to just speak up in the first place. I think sometimes when there's a good flow in an interview room, but you know, like, an ambulance went by or something that's not going to sound great, it's better to just interject and be like, hey, can you ask that question again, and just repeat your answer. Even if it's not the exact same one, you're going to get the same message across, just because, you know, there are certain sounds and things that you can't take out. I also think it's important to, when you are working in a creative partnership, to, like, make sure everyone has an understanding of what the final vision of the show is going to be. Because sometimes it can be difficult if you're, like, I write scripts for some people, and I try to send things in advance and say, like, does this sound like your voice? You know, practice it a few times. And, you know, part of that is just learning to work with another person. And when you are a producer for hire, that can be a slightly difficult challenge, just because not everyone speaks the same. Not everyone uses the same idioms and slang words, and you want things to sound natural coming out of their mouth. And so I think one of my bigger lessons is always being like, hey, do you just have something of you talking for a while? Have you done some public speaking? Have you done a TED Talk or anything that I can hear what your voice sounds like, so that we're going to produce the best material possible? Or else you're sitting in a recording booth for a lot longer than you need to be, because they're reading lines and you're like, this does not sound like you. You know, like, if someone's stumbling over the words you've written for them, it's way better if you can have some time to think about how it would sound best coming from them.
Yeah, prep is everything
yeah.
in podcasting. So going back to interjecting when you're in the room or in your, you're in the booth mm-hmm. and you're monitoring and your host is doing something that you know is going to be a problem in the recording, but the interview flows good and you're questioning whether or not you should interrupt.
Right.
Okay. I've had this issue a few times and I've learned to interrupt because one time I was producing for someone and a few minutes into the interview, the host decides to, and I have a microphone in front of me to illustrate, he decides to grab the microphone and point the head of it to the floor.
Right.
And put his nose in front of the microphone.
What?
And speak into it that way.
Interesting approach.
Yeah. And he was on a Skype call with somebody, and I was monitoring, and all of a sudden, he's
right.
talking like that. You know, it did not sound good, but I was very green.
Mm-hmm.
I was very green. This was someone who is in the public eye.
Yep.
I did not want to stop them from talking, and I let it go. I let it go. And I did end up fixing a lot of it in the edit.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of work, way too much work that I did not get paid for.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the other thing is like it saves you. I mean, unless you're a producer who just wants to make that cash money and you can charge an hourly rate for your
right.
editing work, which I do. But it's also like that's not the editing work I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having to fix things that are so that would have been so much easier to just capture properly are not fun puzzles for me. That's just annoying. You know, I'd rather be like, oh, how can we tell this story in the best arc possible? That's a fun puzzle. Not how do I take out this ambulance that's running behind you or right. take out whatever someone's done on a microphone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. Let's switch gears more and talk about producing. You work with several different hosts, mm-hmm. as you were saying. What have you learned or what advice could you give working with different people who are hosts? And what can you tell me about their successes that we could potentially pass on to someone else?
I would say like don't skimp on pre-production meetings. Like it might not feel as productive to just be sitting in a room talking and talking about the show. But when you have that clear vision and like a clear outline of everyone's duties, it just makes everyone's jobs much easier. And for hosts, I would just say, like, ask for what you want. You know, I think a good producer can sometimes be a bit of a mind reader, but that only comes with time with working with people. So if you know, like, you know, it's almost like a talent writer. You know, like, I now know I have some hosts where it's like, oh, I should make sure I have cough drops and, like, hot tea available. And I know what times of day they prefer to record for their voice quality and things like that. And I know that I have another host where they'll be fine with the first take, even though I know like it's not going to be good. So it's like I have to ask for 3 or 4 takes and they might be like, really? And I'm like, yes, like we're going to do this like 5 or 6 times. So be prepared. And so I think just setting expectations and learning everyone's work style is a fun challenge. And then for hosts, you know, make sure you're clear with your producer about what you specifically need from them, especially in the beginning.
Okay. I know working with the hosts and the shows that you work with, you do or help in the aspect of marketing a show. Mm-hmm. Just generally, tell me about an indie podcast. I'm starting my indie podcast. I found my niche mm-hmm. and I have a few episodes together. Sounds good to me. I'm putting it out. Besides the basic stuff of shooting it out to social and mm-hmm. making sure all my friends listen and making sure my mom writes a review.
Yeah.
What should I be doing?
Reviews are very helpful. So I always tell people they should make sure to actually ask for them at the end of episodes.
Like, what is it about reviews?
Well, for some, everything that I've read online, whatever the weird algorithms are that Apple decides to use, reviews somehow make you have a possibility of making it to that new and noteworthy page. But I've seen it go both ways because like one of my favorite shows, they have like hundreds and hundreds of reviews and I've yet to see them ever on the new and noteworthy. I don't know why. Sometimes I do think they just reserve it for if it's coming from a bigger network, which is slightly annoying. But I would say for indie shows is like, don't get discouraged because those numbers are not going to look good at first. you know,
as in download numbers.
Yeah. Okay. Like most shows, if you break over 100 listens per show, like you're doing pretty well for an indie show. It is a very saturated market. Like there's what, over 500,000 shows on Apple right now. So you can do as much as you can, but that's a lot of space to try to carve out for yourself that's not super organized yet. You know, it's not like television where you know you can go to Bravo and watch, you know, your I don't have to care about reality TV, you know. So it's still a bit of a, I hate this term because everyone uses it, the wild, wild west of podcasting. But things that you can do are like go to networking events because if people and print out little cards, like the one of the shows I work on, we have little square business cards. It cost us like $70 for 500 of them and they look good. And we just pass them out everywhere we go.
So you're talking FaceTime with
people. Yeah, like face-to-face, because word of mouth is honestly still like, to qualify any of this, I did my master's in media and marketing. And so like a recommendation from a person is still the best marketing tool. And so one of the shows that I worked on, we put up like a mini trailer in our first episode right before South by Southwest. And then we just like hustled at South by Southwest and passed out cards and talked to people and networked and got other podcasters to listen to our show in hopes that they would recommend things, which I think as a community, we could all get better about doing. I think there's still a lot of competitiveness in the market, which I get, but I think if we want to like raise the tide and all of the boats with us, then we have to start like shouting from the rooftops other shows that we enjoy so that other people will find them. And then live events are also really great if that's a possibility for you, or find something that's going on in your town that you can jump on. So if there's like a live storytelling show, see if you can tell a story from your podcast, or just do something, have a table there. Find the communities that'll be interested in your work. The other thing is being on other people's shows is super, super helpful. And I know like on shows I've been on, we've had other podcasters on, and there's always that hope that everyone's going to cross promote. And sometimes that doesn't happen. And you just have to kind of go with it. But it's something like most shows average less than 100 downloads per show. If you're over 200, you're in like the top 10% of podcasts. Which doesn't sound, you know, that stat sounds great and looks good if you're trying to get advertisers. Like, yeah, we're in the top 10% of all shows on iTunes. But yeah, it's you're not going to be Ira Glass overnight.
No, I like to tell my clients who say, well, I'm only getting 100, 200 downloads an episode. Mm-hmm. And they have a frown on their face.
I'm like, that's great.
What I tell them is think of a room full of 100 or 200 people listening to you. Does that change your perspective? And it does.
Right.
They're like, that's right. I'm not thinking about those individuals. I've never had an audience that big. No, you haven't. Now you do.
Right.
And if you keep going, you can grow it.
Exactly.
Why would somebody do a season-based show other than, you know, you're doing a fiction podcast and you have a certain number of episodes like a TV show? Mm-hmm. I know one of the shows that you produce is an interview show, mm-hmm. but you have seasons. What was the idea behind that?
I think mostly it's that we're both people who still have to work full-time jobs to pay our bills. And so having a set time to like take a step back, review what we did, and then decide what we want to do moving forward. We also have been taking some of our time off to enter competitions and things like that, just to see if there's a realm of possibility of getting some more support for our show. And I think it's smart in a way because it helps to decrease the chances of burnout because you're already building in breaks, right? I know some shows put out like two seasons per year instead of just one. And I think that just totally depends on your bandwidth, you know, and kind of going all the way back to our first conversation about failure. I think a lot of the reason why I stopped doing the show is like my first show was just I ran out of time and energy and didn't have anyone else that was there to kind of help relift the spirit and re-energize like the creativity around it, which is one of the reasons, like as a producer, getting to know your host and knowing what their re-energizing moments are, right? Like some people need to spend time alone and by themselves and not working on things. Some people get more energized by grabbing onto even more creative projects and doing way too much. that would be me. So it's like, you know, you have to know what works for you and your structure and what's going to make you happy. Because if you're not happy while you're producing the work, then what's the point?
So it sounds like while you're doing your first show as a host, what would re-energize you potentially and make you happy and maybe help you keep going would have been to have somebody else there
right.
helping you.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if you did have, say, the perfect partner or the nearly perfect partner who was helping you produce this show? How would we be talking about that show now? What would that experience have been like for you?
Oh, man. I mean, at this point, I hope I would have, like, interviewed Michelle Obama or something, but a girl can dream. But I think it's just something that would have continued to evolve, because even in the limited conversations I had, it was really funny where these people would come in and they'd know, like, the premise of the show I told them was I'm just interested. You know, it's called Hey Ladies. Like, I'm talking to women about their experiences in the world. And the interview I never posted. But Sabrina, she was just like, I totally thought you were just going to ask me questions about, like, what is it like to be a woman in the music industry? And I was like, no, I just want to know what it's like to be you, because that's who you are. Like, you don't have to qualify it. It's just like, what does it mean to be you in your industry?
It wasn't like, you're a spokesperson for all women. Speak.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not trying to make you the token in the interview mm-hmm. room. I just wanted to know what their experiences were like. And so, you know, I think it would have hopefully evolved to have been a whole conversation about what even is the purpose of gender, you know, and what is the purpose of me qualifying it as a show that interviews women, and what, how do I define that, and what do those conversations look like? You know, I think all podcasts kind of give you that room to explore topics in very interesting ways and to kind of bob and weave and figure out what conversations you want to be having moving forward.
You talked about being more generous in this space, people recommending each other, cross-promoting. What are some of the shows that you like and inspire you that you want to talk about and that you tell people you have to listen to this show?
Right now, I'm obsessed with Zig Zag. Have
okay.
you heard of that one?
I just started it.
Yeah, they're only like 4 episodes in, but it's 2 fantastic creators. And it's been really interesting to listen to their experiences coming. So they came from WNYC, and now they're starting their own company, very a la Gimlet and startup. They're kind of documenting the process, and they, you know, they shout that out. They're not trying to hide the fact that they took, you know, inspiration from that. But it's interesting to listen to them talk about sort of the confines of working with investors versus working with, they're working with cryptocurrency right now, and then what it was like being at WNYC and sort of what it means to truly own your work. And it's been, and I don't know if it's an interesting trend that I've seen more and more audio producers, storytellers, podcasters, journalists, moving away from these larger institutions, I think to give more creative freedom, and then also to not have the burden of whatever the financial bottom lines are in some ways. But it's like such an interesting double-edged sword in that they have to figure out a way to pay themselves and pay their bills, right? But they don't have to, like, appease whatever the sponsor is that's coming down from the head office or whatever you want it to be. So it's weird to see. This is a total tangent off of what my shows are, what shows I like. But I just think it's so interesting that in this short amount of time that, like, podcasting has been around, we've already jumped into what television has done. Right. So, like, everyone's now moving to things like Hulu and Netflix and things that don't have advertisers attached to them because it gives them more creative freedom. And now we're seeing, you know, these behemoths of podcasting, the WNYCs, the NPRs, PRX, all these folks. People are now leaving that space in order to do the same thing and, like, create whatever the Hulu and Netflix of podcasting is going to be.
Yeah, that's interesting, because if you look at the history of podcasting, and it's really hard to nail down the history of podcasting.
Yes.
I think a lot of people take credit for starting things or for mm-hmm. being the influencer of someone else who you thought started it. It's really hard. And I guess if you weren't there, you're never really going to get the clear history, right? But generally, podcasting kind of started very independently.
Yes.
It was, you know, people in their home with computers, internet connections. And then, of course, we've always had NPR.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had content creators like PRX, like you mentioned, WNYC, who largely created content in the public radio space.
Yeah.
And a lot of that was distributed
through NPR outside of the local chain.
Right.
And of course, when podcasting happened, oh, this technology's here. So a lot of these content, public media content creators who had been creating content for decades decided to funnel their content through podcasting.
Yeah.
Obvious step. So I hadn't really thought of it that way, the way you framed it, that now we're seeing people leaving that public media space to start their own independent, creative, content-producing, you know, podcast companies. It's pretty interesting. Like, of course, Alex Blumberg was the guy who kind of started that trend, it feels like.
Yeah, there was also a crew that left Earwolf Midroll around the same time and I think started Pineapple Street.
Okay, yeah.
Which has been mostly focused on doing, I think, branded content, less on like original content, but that's definitely where the money making is at this point. So,
did they do Hillary's Pod?
I think so. Yeah, yeah, and they also do Lena Dunham did one, that Lenny Letter one. So, right. You know, they, and I think they do Janet Monk now as well, her show.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting how quickly that trend has already started in this media. But going back to shows that I love, so Zig Zag, which obviously got a lot on my mind right now. The other one that I love that I can't believe has never been on New and Noteworthy is called She's All Fat. It's these two writers out in LA, and they talk about, and they're an indie show, but they just talk about like sizism and how it's sort of one of the last isms we don't talk a lot about, and what that looks like in media. And it's something, you know, as a person who I try to be as like open and honest about my learning experiences and trying to be a better person is like an area that's really challenged me mentally and emotionally about a lot of things. So they're, I think, doing fantastic work. They're on a break right now. They're about to go into their third season, I think, but they're really great. What else am I in? Now, of course, it's like blank. It's like, oh, can I look at my phone?
if you have one more, that's great. If not, I have another question. So
yeah.
Oh, maybe I can narrow it down. Local.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think it's I Love You So Much is the name of the show. It's from the Austin American Statesman crew. I think they do a great job of talking about what's going on here in Austin. And then I also, oh my gosh, yeah. Now it's all flooding back to me. Chris Cubis, great show. He called Canceled Pod. He talks about shows that only lasted a season or less. And then Karina Magyar, who's also a comedian in Austin, has another show called Thanks Academy, where she watches all of the Best Picture winners with her friends. Hilarious. So good.
Yeah. And
I guess I should plug my own shows, right? So I produce Scene with Miranda, which is a show about identity. It's an interview structured show. And then I also produce for an entrepreneurial show called Masters and Founders. It's also an interview-based show here in Austin.
Do you want to let me know where people can find you?
Sure. So listen to my shows. So Scene with Miranda, we're on break, but there's 7 really fantastic episodes sitting in our queue. And then for the next little while, you can hear some of my editing work, at least, on Masters and Founders. And I'm on Twitter. It's at Mariah Gossett. And it's a weird spelling. So I'm MYRRIAH because I have hippie parents. So
thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in a few weeks with another episode. Please drop by createpodatx.com and please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts. You can find our link to Apple and links to all of our social stuff at createpodatx.com. And if you're looking for a great podcast studio here in Austin, visit us at Permanent Record. That's permanentrcrd.com. We would love to help you record a great sounding podcast. Okay, that's all we got, and I love you.